I'm Abby.
I'm Evan.
And I'm Katie.
And you're listening to The Fashion Hags.
We love to love
and love to hate
all things fashion.
Hey. Hello, hello, everyone. Fashion Hag Land, Fashion Hag Podcast. We are in the basement. Episode 74.
We're doing it.
I just had a vision of a Fashion Hag Land, but like a
pretty
candy
sweet.
Land.
Like Dolly,
like a Candyland play, like board.
What's Dolly Parton's one? Isn't it Dollywood?
Dollywood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's more like more of a Dolly World thing.
Where the gates open. Yeah.
It's just big hair.
There's no H&M boutique there, I tell you that.
No. But I bet you get a Western shirt with sequins on it.
Oh, damn straight. Yeah. Bunch of French.
There's not a wig store, but a wig mall.
Wig Emporium.
Wig Emporium.
We are very excited today. We have a guest in. It's been a while since we've had a guest.
An extra human.
And I've been very excited to have this guest in
You've been talking about it for a bit. For a minute.
This is Jenny Amber. Thank you so much. She makes perfume. So we are going to talk about that. I know nothing about this, so I'm really excited
to
learn about it. We met months ago through a mutual friend, and we're like immediately, we're cool.
Yeah.
We're going to be just fine.
You asked me the leading question. I'm like, oh God. Okay, fine.
Blah, blah, blah.
Okay, blah, blah, blah.
And I was
And
wrapped.
Then I get a business card.
Yeah. I have this little podcast. Would you like to talk about it?
Yeah. You call me sometime.
And you graciously accepted. So thank you for coming.
Yes, thank you.
Scheduling in December isn't always easy, so we appreciate it.
Yeah,
I'm honored.
Very excited. I'm going to let you, like I said, say the name of your company so I don't butcher it so that all of our listeners can get it correctly right off the bat.
It's more visual.
Yes.
Name. Yeah. my company name is Enone Perfume.
Very nice.
That's it.
Very elegant. Inone. I love it.
Lots of Inone. E's.
Yeah. I will not Inone. Mess it up.
Mm-hmm.
But you had to say it first so that I can get it right.
No problem. Say it again.
I've been warned that maybe I might have to change my name. But for now, I'm going with
it. I like it.
No, ma'am.
Yeah. Evan says no, thank you.
Yes, Evan.
People can learn how to say Tchaikovsky. They can learn to say Inone.
I know. There you go. Yeah.
And like you said, it looks really, like it's beautiful.
It looks beautiful.
And it's like Greek mythology.
Make a thing out of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where does the name come from?
Question number one.
There you go.
What is Inone?
Totally not prepared for this question. Inone. So there's the common, easily Googled story about her, I think, and that's longer. And I'll give you the other story, which is she was a herbalist and prophet. And if you dig hard enough, is credited with bringing some of Aphrodite's beauty secrets to the land of the humans.
Cool.
Interesting.
As well as some of the herbal knowledge. So she was a bit of a go-between for the humans in getting divine understanding of our natural world.
Wow.
She was a witch.
And she was a witch.
Yeah.
Well, she was.
Evan's on board.
She was a dryad or a nymph or both.
Mm.
There you go.
And then historically, what's important about her is that she was the first wife of Paris.
Okay.
Who started the Trojan War.
I was going to say, right. Who ran off with
Helen of Troy.
Yes.
And they were living happily out in the mountains. And then I'm not really sure what happened first. I think that Aphrodite whispered in his ear, actually, that there was someone more beautiful than Inone out there.
Mm. Just meddling.
out of spite.
So devious. They're just so bored.
So bored. Yeah, they're just the idle rich.
Just started a war.
Yeah, seriously.
Great.
<Yeah.
laughs> So
the idle rich.
So Inone had a prophecy that Paris was going to go to war over Helen of Troy. She warned him that this was a fool's errand and it would end poorly for him, and that he would get injured. Or fatally injured, and the only person that could heal her would be her, and she would refuse him.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So he went off to war, you know, all the thousand ships sailed, all of that business, and he got mortally wounded, dragged back to the mountains to Oenone. She rejected him, sent him packing, then changed her mind, felt bad, tried to track him down, and when she did, he was dead.
I see.
Oh, I like the story to end there, but the story then ends with she was so heartbroken and had so much regret that she threw herself on his funeral pyre or off a mountain.
Or whatever.
So the angle is often like the kind of cuckolded wife that that wouldn't.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah.
You know, I've always loved Greek mythology, so I have nothing.
So I think it's unfortunate that she couldn't just live with her regret, and also this is mythology, we don't actually know how the story ended,
right? Yeah,
but she couldn't just live with that regret and be this powerful woman. She had to die because being a demigod with healing powers and prophetic powers wasn't enough of a reason to live out the rest of your years.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to ignore that last part.
Anyway. Okay, there you go. Cool.
And just be like, shucks, I missed it.
Oh, yeah.
Back down the mountain I go. Yeah.
So that's where Oenone comes from. And I was reading a book one night, and there was just this tiny little mention of her I don't think I said this earlier, where the writer credited her with bringing perfuming to the human world.
I see. Ah.
And I have a background in ancient Greek philosophy and just interest in mythology and various esoteric things. And so that just struck a chord for me.
Yeah, definitely.
And the O and the two O's and the E's. Yeah.
It just looks pretty.
Yeah. That is such a better answer than I was expecting. Like, such a good story.
And I do. Whenever I have a new collection coming out, I always use one word, and these words always find me in these weird situations where it can just be like one line.
Sure, and you see it in passing or something, completely unrelated. Yeah,
I got the word atavism from an interview with Wes Anderson, and had nothing to do with what my collection was about, but he spoke about atavism and atavistic fears and stuff.
And it struck you.
It just kind of like
burrowed into your brain, and there you go.
Oh, what is that? I like that, just using that word instead of, I don't know, survival tactics or
whatever.
Just
other.
More succinct, and it looked pretty.
And yeah, it looked good.
There you go. Well, it's like your logo is much more pretty than spruce, prune, whatever.
Prune.
Well, it would be more. Anyway. Vancouver would be more like spruce and prune.
Yeah. Yes. A little ampersand in the middle.
Sure.
Yeah.
You got to get an ampersand.
You got to get two names and an ampersand in the middle. Not doing it right, apparently.
Probably the word oak in there, too, if you can squeeze it.
And then a little established 2018.
I think to make it legit, right?
Everyone's favorite.
Yeah.
Evan, my story is like yours, where I needed to get a business license to get an alcohol permit because I use alcohol to dilute my perfumes. And I don't want to use vodka. Mm-hmm. I need real alcohol. And so it could have just been my name. I didn't have to have a business name, but the next day I was planning to go in and apply for this license. Mm-hmm. And I'm in the middle of the night reading this book, and that's when I came across this factoid.
There you go.
And I
was like,
kismet.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Done.
There it is.
Yeah.
Meant to be.
Serendipity. It's meant to be. Awesome. What's going on? What's new with you?
I was telling you guys earlier that I'm not feeling my best.
I think you and I overindulged.
We're in a mirror situation.
Copious libations.
I blame my friend Sophia, who came over with a huge mason jar of Negronis.
That'll do it.
And I even watered it down. I'm like, I'll put some soda in there. After like the third one, I'm like, yeah, now, bitch, now you're thinking of, you should know. Anyway, so I'm not as sharp as I would like to be.
It's not the first and second Negronis that you're allergic to.
It's the fifth.
Yeah.
That's the one that's the bad one.
Yeah.
But they were delicious. They went down way too easily. And I had a big spread out last night and then just went to bed and then woke up in the morning and being like, all the food is still out on the counters. Didn't start the dishwasher. Like, literally, my friends left and I just went upstairs and took my pants off, went to bed.
You gotta give yourself
It's fun getting wasted in your own house, though.
It's pretty great. Except I feel terrible because then Dave woke up in the morning and cleaned it all up for me.
That's a good man.
So I feel bad.
He's a good David.
He's a good David. So I woke up and I'm like, I don't remember putting anything away. Oh, because you didn't.
I didn't.
Nope.
That's why.
There you go. Mm-hmm. We had eaten most of the food, but anyway, there's some cheese left over and stuff. I'm like, well, that's not keeping. No, well, that's going to go in the garbage now. Sorry, smoked Gouda. Mm. Oh, so yeah, other than that, I don't have much to report. It's just busy.
I did Christmas the same shit. Thing. Your story and my story are the same.
Yeah.
Annual Christmas party last night. My friend Lindy, former guest.
Yes.
Lindy Barrett threw her annual Christmas party. It was so fun. But again, we had the Aperol spritz right off the bat.
Oh, those are good too.
Went down real easy.
Yeah, they're nice.
Real, real easy. And yeah, we made chocolate chip cookies for the party. Came home. There's chocolate chip cookie debris all over the kitchen.
Who cares?
Like, bye, I have to go record a podcast. See you later. I'm cleaning the kitchen. Because we did not do it last night.
Nope.
But it was like the first like Christmas party time situation, which is like always kind of pumps me up. I love Christmas, so it's nice to see all the little decorations and everybody's talking about holidays and blah, blah, blah. So that's always fun. And seeing pals that you don't get to see.
It's a good excuse to, you know,
to go and do this together. Kind of thing. So, yeah, absolutely. It's good. But yeah, I'm not 100%. like an 84.
Okay, I'm at like a 60 probably.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I was thinking about canceling when I was standing in the kitchen. It's like, Abby, are you sure?
Are you sure this is canceling?
I heard the 17th is open too. We can do that.
No, maybe we need to reschedule. Oh, but we're here and it's fine. Like I was telling Jenny, this is not a particularly intellectual pursuit we're doing.
Yeah.
No. So, no. It's fine. And I have some wonderful co-hosts to pick up the slack.
I don't think they're expecting anything too prosaic from us.
Nope. That's not what people come to us for. No. Specifically.
No. What about
wigs,
you, Evan? What's
dick
going
jokes.
On?
Wigs, dick jokes. That's what's going on. I'm disgustingly busy, and it's very exciting, but it's also very overwhelming.
It's the worst.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's very overwhelming. There's a lot, like, I'm doing a lot of things. I'm like, I'm in meetings with, I wouldn't call it a realtor, but like building managers and like,
oh, sure, because you're looking for a studio
contracts
space.
And like, getting how much is the voltage in this space? Like,
to accommodate all your machines.
Can we do renovations? Can we do all of this stuff? And it's just like,
like you said, it's exciting, but
yeah, like can I just move to the bush in St. Ambrose and get my Pepe to build me a sewing shed with a fucking wood stove in it, and I can just go to town and ship everything from Portage, because like really that sounds like a really good option.
That would be a dream.
Yeah, totally. As long as you got Wi-Fi,
yeah,
exactly,
and electricity.
Mm-hmm.
You're fine.
I'd have to get a license again, probably.
Yeah.
But I'm totally up to that.
Yeah. Like a driver's license?
Yeah.
I let my driver's license expire like 6 years ago.
How much driving have you done?
Like, none. I've never driven in Vancouver.
I was going to say, the one time you've been here.
Yeah. Yeah. There was one situation. I can't remember what it was. I was with somebody and they're like, if I get too drunk, you might need to drive me home. But I ended up just throwing their ass in a cab and walking home. Yeah, you're drunk.
You're fine.
Your hungover ass can go pick up your car tomorrow morning.
Yeah, you find your own exit strategy.
You drinking with a hangover is better than me drinking with one drink in me, let alone drinking stone cold sober.
You mean driving?
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
Maybe. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Point proven.
Point proven.
Done.
Yeah.
Don't drink and drink.
Don't drink and drink.
That's how we got into this in the first place. So
and believe it or not, I did not drink last night.
You did not.
No. Yeah,
out of all of us.
I did not.
Oh, buddy.
You're in good shape.
Yeah. Well, that remains
that's
to be seen. I remember the last episode, I was like, oh, I'm going to the gym and I'm eating healthy. And I was just like, fuck it. I'm so exhausted. Yeah, the first thing to go was the gym.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like, okay, you can work out at home. You don't need to go to the gym. You don't like it anyway.
My God, so I'm
you can talk yourself out
really
of anything.
Good at talking myself out of exercising.
It's probably the
really good
the best thing I am at talking myself out of. Mm-hmm. It's the number one. You don't need to go to the gym. Yeah. Who cares? Just take the stairs. It'll be all right. You'll be fine.
Just stop at McDonald's and take the stairs. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Just get off the bus at one stop earlier and call it a day.
Yeah.
Right? That's the same as a workout.
Mm-hmm. There you go. It totally counts.
Wow. Jenny, you have a bunch of little bottles in front of you. I
it's very
to smell on the internet.
I know we're doing yes. The world is a podcast first. This is a smell cast. Get your sniffers ready up on your iPhones, headphones, earbuds.
Yeah, one of those.
You know what? We'll work on the specifics afterwards.
Yeah, you do you.
I want to know. I am curious how you even got into this field. How you thought, like, huh, I like smelling stuff. I'm going to make things to smell. Like, how did that even start? Because that's not a thing I would have even thought of as a job you could do.
Yeah.
It's not an obvious choice. So I'm curious how you ended up there.
That's why it took me till 40 to make that decision.
To figure it out. Yeah.
I thought about, question number two. Mm-hmm. I thought about that a lot this morning, and I don't have a really linear answer.
There's never a linear answer with that question, so don't worry about it.
I've always had a pretty strong sense of smell and often strong reactions to smells, mm-hmm. or I can smell that one little, fleck of dog shit remaining on your boot.
Yes. Yeah, from my way.
For example.
Yeah.
I've always liked things that smell. When I was a teenager, I worked at Lush.
Oh, yeah.
Or when I was much younger, going through the mall and going to the body shop and just smelling those things. And later in life, I got into studying herbalism. And it's funny, I brought two tinctures here that I can use in perfuming, but traditionally would be used medicinally. So there is an interest in herbalism. And then, as I said before, this drive towards the esoteric or the divine. And when I was studying philosophy, I was really interested in history and metaphysics and mythology and magic. And I found this note on my fridge when I was moving out of my apartment a number of years ago, and it had the name of this book on it, which is this kind of perfume history Bible that I now own. And that was 10 years ago, and it's in faded pen on the side of my fridge. I'm packing up my magnets. And I was like, holy shit, I've been meaning to get this book for a decade.
Percolating,
right? And so there's just these things coming up. And and I think as I've studied more, I understand why it's something that I'm attracted to, mm-hmm. because it does combine history, mythology, ancient cultures, divinity, magic. And then the more I study, the kind of the mirrored version of that, the almost biochemical mirrored version of that, as I've learned a little bit about how the olfactory system works, different sorts of memory, how scent interacts with memory. So there are those connections. And then when my mom suddenly passed away a few years ago and my life was turned upside down, I didn't know what I was doing anymore. And it was almost like, not that I had a big plan at the time, but it was a clean slate for me. Mm-hmm. And I was given the opportunity to just kind of start fresh. And I was very untethered from reality and the world, because it was kind of like, okay, I'm on my own.
Yeah.
I can, quote, do anything, which for my personality is super overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
Possibilities are not freedom to me. They're just a nightmare.
Yeah. They're paralyzing, right?
And I was out on a walk one day and I just thought to myself, I'm going to be a perfumer. And 5 years of counseling kicked in. And I was like, how do you do that? Oh, well, you become a perfumer.
You just do it.
And it was so simple. And it was the simplest thought I'd ever had in my life. And you look at those words and you're like, right, like
that's it.
You do it.
That's it. Yeah.
And but for me, that like I think that I'd worked through so much baggage or so many challenges that finally that simple like cause effect made sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in a position to pursue this like really strange art form. Like it is beyond challenging. It's expensive. There aren't a lot of people that do it. So there's not a lot of resources and support. So you're kind of on your own with like 100,000 molecules wondering how they relate to one another and kind of wishing you'd done better in chemistry.
So when you and I met, you, I think, had just come from Israel, trip to Israel. You were just on your way to Israel.
I was on my way there. Yeah.
Yes. So what was that about? What brought you to Israel? Was it that was a training kind of a situation, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I met one of the only perfumers in, I mean, I shouldn't, sorry, everyone who's a perfumer in Canada, and I don't know about you, but for a number of years when I'd research courses, particularly short-term classes, a perfumer kept on coming up who lived in Vancouver at the time, Ayala Moriel, and she's been a perfumer for 20 years, like most of her adult life. And so she was living in Vancouver at the time, and she's Canadian-Israeli. Mm-hmm. So I took a couple of classes with her in Vancouver, and then she moved to her home village in Israel. She lives way up in northern Israel, which is the Western Galilee, on this eco-village that's totally off the grid in the middle of the bush, 30 kilometers away from Lebanon. So
everywhere you talk about that you've been to pursue this sounds like fucking cool. Paradise.
Yes.
Yeah. Like I can just see, I can picture it in my mind. Like, of course you'd want to be a perfumer. That's what it looks like.
Well, yeah. Perfume, the plants that started perfume grow in these there, like right? beautiful, beautiful, warm and like really culturally rich
ancient
places.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of the first lands that we have history of people occupying really.
Yeah.
So then I've been to Israel twice to stay there in my cabin with my solar panel and go to her studio.
Amazing.
And we have week-long classes and outings into the bush and to this amazing, see, I could talk for a long time. This amazing, last year we went to this amazing distillery that's on a kibbutz with this man, this very humble man who makes gin. He makes a number of things. But what was magical about him is that as the perfumers are sitting there with him and he's explaining how he makes his gin and how it's different from other gins, we're like, yeah, dude, you're a perfumer. So he, short story, he distills each botanical separately.
Okay.
So instead of putting all of the plants into the still at once and making gin, he does like specific, this is rose, this is fig leaf, et cetera, for 12 botanicals. And then for each batch, we'll change the levels of each ingredient create that balance that he wants.
Wow.
Because some roses won't be as potent, right?
Sure.
Or they'll be drier or however it works. So he's like hand blending each batch of gin.
So he's a witch too.
So yes. Yeah. And a perfumer.
That is so cool.
And after we've had like 12 tastes, these tastes are like two fingers each and it's one in the afternoon. And he's got this honey booze and I'm like, oh my God. And I'm rubbing it on my hand. I'm like, smell this, smell this. And he's looking at me. I'm like, it's fucking perfume, man. And he's like, oh yes, yes. Like I'm just kind of wiping his brow. Anyway.
Doing his due.
Sorry, Juve. I'm not making fun of you. It was amazing. So, yes. So that's how I end up in the Middle East.
So how much of making perfume is the chemical, you know, sit down in front of a quote unquote lab, like putting your, in your, you know, your workshop, and how much of it is, you know, growing the herbs or growing
or
the flowers
or whatever.
Like how much of it is, you know, running through the fields in Israel or southern France, and how much of it is sitting in your kitchen actually like cooking this stuff together?
For me, very little of it is chemistry. I can't say for sure. I'd imagine a lot of artisanal perfumers perhaps learn chemistry as they go along, which I'm doing. But then you've got like fragrance and flavor labs that are creating all the stuff, and then they've got, they'll often have like an artistic perfumer.
Okay.
A nose, an artistic perfumer, and then likely a number of chemists helping them make their formula strong or like have longevity and kind of backing them up. So for me, I know the tiniest bit of chemistry, the tiniest bit, like eight molecules, but that's useful when I'm combining things or if I'm trying to bring out a certain element. Like the animalic note in a flower, for example, you think about that and it's like, oh, that's indole. There, one of the molecules I know. But if you know that what other plants or what other essential oils have that same molecular structure, you can add some of that to emphasize that particular note, right?
Ah.
So for me, it's the eight things I know are a bit of a guide.
Right.
And I realize that I really want this punchy, like rosy, whatever it is, this zesty thing. It's like, oh, okay, so what other oils have that in common and won't overwhelm and instead will expand?
That's so cool. And then the alcohol, of course, is like the, is it like the fluid that, like the solution that carries it? Like how?
Yeah. So, so essential oils, these things that I brought are diluted at 10%.
Okay.
So they're 10% essential oil and then 90% alcohol.
Got it.
So for composition, I'll use those. And then with the final product, I'll use a lower concentration, sorry, a lower amount of alcohol and a higher concentration of essential oils.
Got it.
To help the scent. Hold on. I don't know if I answered your question. I guess there is a lot of running through the fields. But there's a lot of like weighing and scratching your head and swearing in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Because even with the essential oils, I weigh them to dilute them.
Okay.
It's not a milliliter thing. It's a weight.
Oh, really?
Because they all have different viscosities.
Oh.
Right?
Like, sure.
Thickens.
Yeah, summer.
Literally.
Summer. Yeah. Summer saps.
Depending on what you want.
Yeah. So you weigh it out, like a gram of lavender oil, and then you add nine grams of alcohol.
Ha, ha, ha.
So, yeah. And
so
then,
interesting.
And then math.
Yeah. Damn it. It is everywhere.
It is everywhere.
Yeah. They were wrong.
I mean, it can be comparable to like how we know certain things in fractions, or we remember certain things in, I don't know, like the makeup of a fabric.
Yeah.
It's just like, don't put that under too much heat. Don't iron that. Don't put that in the
dryer. Or like a weight.
Don't get that wet.
Of a fabric.
Yeah, like the ounces and stuff.
Inch,
yeah.
All that kind of stuff. Yeah.
So it's just like all of those weird things you'd never think you'd need to know to make.
Different types of weaves.
The things you didn't think people needed to know to be able to make a delicious perfume.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Ugh.
Oh.
So beautiful.
Do you have a favorite scent? Like one that you... I mean, that's probably an impossible question, but is there one that, or maybe one that like, that sort of jumps off for you that you keep coming back to?
I think it really depends on my mood. I've noticed too that a lot of the, when I'm working, I'm often gravitating towards herbs, which are sometimes, in my opinion, kind of difficult to deal with because in the essential oil form, they're very pungent and they've got that kind of, you think of lavender, oregano, or rosemary, they've got that kind of like camphor smell, a medicinal smell.
Yeah.
My favorite smells really depends on my mood. I'm in love with this sage tincture that I brought that is some canyon sage that I picked. And I think I'm still attached to scents that are true to the experience of being there with that plant.
Mm-hmm.
So with the sage tincture, it kind of transferred very well. I don't know. It's like I've always been a rose girl, but it's funny because even secretly, I have not composed in the last couple of years since I've become more serious and focused. I've not composed a rose perfume, not even going near it.
Really?
Yeah. It's like, no, girl, you just stay over there. I'll wait until I'm good enough,
right?
To like,
you can tackle
to
it.
Dig in. Yeah.
Right. Oh, that's so interesting.
Interesting. You like it too much?
In a way, or just, yeah. I think also, I'd be so frustrated. Like, I'm,
sure.
I find this already extremely frustrating. Like,
we can.
Yeah.
The patience, the time, the challenge of just like, no, I fucked
that's
that
not
up.
It. No.
And I'm not skilled enough to recover, so another vial over there.
Yeah.
Start again, and then questioning the formula I already have before I even get to the part
to the
where
next.
I made a mistake.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah, with rose, it's like it would drive me nuts. I think it would drive me nuts to be like, how can you make a rose smell shitty?
Yeah.
you're terrible at this. Give up. You know, go back to house cleaning. Yeah, so.
It is totally like mad science-y.
It's yes.
In a way, right? Like just combining different things, seeing what works, seeing what doesn't work, adding a little bit more of this. It's so when you think of perfume, like when you go through a department store, you go through a perfume shop, whatever, it's always so beautiful and so, you know, clinical and clean and sort of elevated and, you know, there's hints of this and that and blah, blah, blah. And it reminds you of this and that. But the reality of it, like with clothes, is it took so much work to get this thing and so many failed attempts and so many tearing your hairs out and then so many elations that you've figured it out finally and you know, you can go to bed with a smile on your face instead of pulling your hair out or whatever.
Rarely.
Yeah.
I'm still in the beginner phase.
The reason you do all of that is to get to those moments of elation and
success. Quote unquote success.
Quote unquote. Yeah.
Yes, whatever that looks like. Or smells like.
Or smells like, of course. Yeah. When we were upstairs before, we were chatting about you did a trip to France and you mentioned that
you
there's
talk about Chanel, don't you?
I am curious. Well, that opens up an interesting door.
About Chanel.
It doesn't necessarily mean Chanel, but I'm curious what you can tell us about that, the part of the world that you were in the south of France, and the sort of history of the perfume there is quite sacred and quite secret. And I think that's quite an interesting part of it, of this sort of secrecy, this like you don't tell people, you know, the like your grandma's cookie recipe, like you're never going to share that recipe, just take it to your grave kind of thing.
Yeah.
And with these big, huge brands like that, that as you were saying, like the French in particular have decided that they've invented perfume and they can write the history on that because, I mean, it's partially true in any case.
Well,
but
it's lived there for so long.
For so long. But you mentioned there's, you know, areas of agriculture that are, you can't even kind of talk about because that's Chanel's fields.
Yeah. There's this area in Grasse. That's as good as I can get at French.
Sounds great.
there are fields of roses that are only used for production of Chanel perfume, and they own that area. And I'm not sure, perhaps you can go and visit these flower fields, but only, I imagine, through like various bureaucratic
hoops
checks.
And
it would need to be important, ultimately, to do that. So that's kind of interesting, having this sort of sequestered land. And then Grasse first became, so it's the south of France. It's basically, is it the Mediterranean? It's basically, I mean, the Mediterranean is there, but it's this Mediterranean climate. So you have tons of jasmine and roses. What else are they known for? Tuberose. And then as you head up north into the more mountainous area, best lavender I've ever smelled in my life, grown there. And so what happened was in Grasse, they were originally a leather tannery, if that's the right word.
Okay, yeah. That's
so this was hundreds of years ago, but that was in this little town. This is where they'd process all of this leather, and it stinks.
It stinks,
right? So looking around, it was like, how do we make this stuff not stink so much? Because it was not selling very well, or there were problems where people were complaining, like the big importers or the queens. So sorry, my teacher, you told me all this history. I forgot the specifics. So they looked around, all of these beautiful flowers are growing, and so started distilling these flowers and creating flower waters and essences to put on the tanned leather to try and make it smell better.
And make up for the stink.
Wow.
And so they're using what was around in order to do that. And then discovered that they grew some of the most beautiful roses and orange blossoms and jasmine.
And whatever beautiful plants, yeah.
Yeah. And then, so then that industry turned into a perfume industry. And I'm sure there are like various important perfumers, et cetera, that I'm missing out on that kind of,
Of course.
Moved there, did their thing, and helped create
made it
this.
What it was or is,
Huh. Because I just think it's such an interesting kind of dichotomy of, you know, this little vial of thing that's like a high-end thing. It's not, it's an expensive commodity.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of a luxury item for sure.
Yeah.
But it's so closely tied to agriculture that you wouldn't see a little bottle of perfume or spritz a Chanel No. 5 and think, oh, this comes from a giant field that is grown and farmed in the south of France. That's how this comes about. There's such a disconnect between those two images that it just seems miles and miles away. It's so interesting. And the history, like you said, of you know, that area and how that even comes to be is so far away from you know, going to the first floor of a department store and just walking through all the aisles. Like, it's such a, yeah, it's such a different image.
And just, I mean, the fashion industry, there's so many brands that exist because of their perfume sales, right? Mm-hmm. That's a huge economic factor in these brands. Like, they get their money selling this stuff so they can make the other stuff.
Right.
That doesn't sell as much or, right, you know, that not that many people buy because it is.
Or the
that,
margins are way, way, way
the margins are way super different. But it's all that you can't buy a $4,000 Chanel dress, but you can drop $100.
Right. So you can participate.
So you can participate in that as aspirationalness of the brand and what that means.
And the luxuriness of the brand. You maybe can't wear a Chanel suit, but you can wear a Chanel perfume.
Yes.
You can still wear Chanel.
Mm-hmm. It's a Chanel girl.
Yeah.
Whatever that looks like.
Yeah.
And the secrets behind making that perfume and the secrets behind making that suit are very secretive.
Yes.
And that whole, like, run deep. That whole essence and that whole culture within that company is very interesting.
Very well guarded.
It's very, I'd say, is it very French?
Probably. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The French are very notorious for being secretive about many things.
And also, no, that's. And also thinking they're pretty great.
Yeah.
And some instances, it's you know,
it's valid.
It's founded. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I have a very simple question.
Yeah.
How do you make a perfume? What do you do?
It's so simple.
Yeah.
Yeah. Easy.
But there's
you
like
just make one.
Notes and tones and like,
oh,
you're like, yeah, there's the levels of things.
What is
like,
the model?
Yeah.
Like, what do you? Well,
like you said, you have to know what works with what, like chemically, and then also like olfactorily.
But like, how do you start?
Yeah, like what do you do?
There's a number of traditional perfume families, and thankfully, some of them. So one of the ones I brought is a fougère, and a fougère has a fairly specific structure in terms. At least that's what I've learned. Where it's got a balance between these three different components.
Okay.
And those components, so one of them is coumarin. Did I bring my tonka bean? I did. So one of them is coumarin, which is like a powdery, I should really give you a stick for that, but can you smell something?
Oh, yeah.
So it's got this powdery.
Yeah. It's a very, I don't think I've ever smelled that smell in my life before.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, it smells sort of like other things. This is the worst for a podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry, this is really bad.
Yeah.
Can you guys smell this? It
smells great.
Give your iPhone screen a scratch.
Yeah, there you go.
So, for example, this perfume family, coumarin is one of those elements, and you want a certain amount, like I think it's almost 30% of your composition will have coumarin in it, but there's a number of different ingredients that have coumarin. So it's structured where kind of like 70% of it is written out, but in only a very loose, it's kind of like if you were going to make 30% of something red, but it wasn't specific as to the sort of red.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then you choose all these different reddish toned things, right?
Mm-hmm.
You need this again?
The indigenous queer friends might be angry, but that kind of smells like sweetgrass.
Yeah, totally. It has coumarin.
Yeah.
Sweetgrass. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Gonna have that
something
stick.
You know. Hop on that for a minute. There we go.
Yeah, so pretend I'm sitting in a field at home.
So one way is to kind of follow these outlines. That's quite specific. Most fragrance families probably don't have as much of a built-in structure.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the perfumery borrows from music, or I don't know who borrowed first.
Yeah.
But there's top, heart, and then bass notes.
Okay.
And so like, if we were to sit down and make a perfume, I'd probably say you want, I don't know, like 35%, 40% top notes. Like you can weight them equally.
Okay.
Or you can, the top note's the introduction. So I've been taught to like use more of those often.
So that's the front of the smell.
Like yeah.
The initial
most
thing.
Citrus oils, for example. It's the first thing you smell. And then they're also the first notes to disappear.
Okay.
And then you get into the heart,
uh-huh.
And then the heart chills it for a while,
yeah.
And then that integrates into the bass, and then the bass notes are the ones that last the longest,
the left one,
and have like a fixative quality.
Very cool.
Yeah. So you can start with top, middle, bottom,
yeah,
and then kind of go from there. So you can choose. I'd give you an array of top notes, an array of middle notes, an array of bass notes, and I'd say choose one of each. And smell them together
yeah.
And like find a nice little trio. And then you could start with that And then it's like, okay, one more top note. Mm. And you choose another top note that kind of blends with.
Sure, that would accentuate or.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So interesting. That's,
it sounds like you're talking about music. Like it sounds like you're composing
a piece of music. Yeah.
And it's thematically, it's not that far off.
Mm-hmm. And then there's another, I don't think I brought an example. So there's an accord.
Another language, musical term.
And an accord. I made a mustard flower. Is that what this is? No. I made a mustard flower accord, which is five or six ingredients mixed together to create what I'm calling mustard flower.
Okay.
And then I'm taking that mustard flower accord and using it as a single note within the Galilee perfume.
Mm. Oh, cool.
So if you made, so as if one could make mustard flower essential oil, which as far as I know, you can't.
I see.
So I have this in a chord that is actually one note within these other eight notes, but it itself is built up of six notes.
I see.
Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah.
Yes. Layered and combined.
So it's like music, the way that I'm thinking about it now that I'm on this musical theme is the difference between playing a string on a guitar and playing a chord.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because you get a different sound strings.
And it's all, Oh, it's so deep and so interesting. I just like when you first started talking to me about this, I was like, tell me everything. I know nothing about this. And it is so interesting. It's like easy to nerd out.
Sure.
On the like chemistry side of things, mm-hmm. but also on the like you said, the like smells are so connected. They're such a personal thing. They're so connected to memory and they're so.
So subjective. And
so subjective.
Taste. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you like? What do you react mm-hmm. to?
Yeah. And everyone has a strong feeling of, say, lavender.
Whatever.
Or, mm-hmm. you know, apple blossom or whatever.
Associations.
Yeah. And so different associations remind you of different things that are, you know, really lovely or really painful or whatever. But it's all just feelings. Like, it's all an emotional. I just find it so interesting.
So the magic comes in, right?
Totally.
Like it's like unexplainable and like trying to also translate that into words and to like, trying to explain this stuff is a bit of a mind fuck. Like,
It can be. There's
how to communicate that verbally or, you know.
I think that there is an element of magic to it all because each, especially when you're using naturals, they do have like a character. And they are entities, right? And they're made up of hundreds of different parts and each is, they have different, what's the word, constitutions ultimately. Mm-hmm. But going into the memory and feeling thing, which is something that I keep on giving myself a headache trying to write about, is that what the olfactory system is different from your visual system. Is that the right word? Visual.
Sure. Yeah, sounds great.
In that the olfactory
as
bulbs.
As a non-scientist, that sounds
cool. Okay, cool. So the olfactory bulbs, which are in here, basically they're
under your eyebrows.
Yeah. And they're next to your brain. They don't really have a filter. They are a part of your brain.
Oh, okay.
Or maybe everyone's like, what the fuck? I'll start again.
The one brain scientist who listens to fashion hair.
Yeah, totally. It's like, bitch, what?
Screaming into their phone.
No, where smell differs from other senses neurologically is that there are nerve fibers that lead from your olfactory bulb directly into your amygdala, which is the part of your brain that houses feeling and emotion.
Right.
Whereas with your eyes, when data goes through your eyes, it goes into your neocortex, which is like, quote, the rational brain.
Right.
That is about facts, ideas, organizing things. It's very structured. Oh, so the data goes through your eyes into your brain, gets structured by the neocortex, and then goes into the emotional zone to be analyzed and shelved accordingly.
Right.
Mm. Whereas smells bypass that area aren't organized by facts, ideas, etc., and go straight into the emotion zone.
Interesting.
And so something I'm really like, and then it gets even more trippy.
I'm sure.
We're talking about like sorts of memory and like the self and subjective time and crazy shit. Cause I feel like
memory's
fucking weird.
This is a metaphysical next level bullshit. It just is blowing my mind. I love
it. So I think that's, but I don't think, I know that that's why we have very emotional, and by emotional, I mean just feelings, right? Mm-hmm. There's always that sense, you smell something, and some people are really good at nailing it. I'm not. But smell something, it's like, oh, that's so familiar. And to me, what's familiar is the feeling that I'm having. Mm-hmm. I'm not like, oh, grandma's backyard.
Yeah. Right.
Right? I was five. It was sunny.
Yeah.
Sometimes that happens. And for some people, that's quite regular. But for me, it's like, it's the smell feeling of it all. And so when I learned this tiny little bit about neuroscience, I was like, oh. So it's not just that I'm trippy or or I'm like, you know, imposing my views on this thing or that I'm a witch. Yeah. Well, I'm definitely a witch.
We're definitely but we can't tell too many people.
But that was,
I just found out that a lot of witches were hanged in Victoria, which is not far from Vancouver.
No, so that's there's a lot of witchy shit in Victoria.
Yeah, that's been happening for a long time.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
It's one of the centers of like witchy energy in the world,
witchcraft. And like Satanism and all that kind of spooky shit.
Well, I have no time for that. Yeah. But my witchcraft has nothing to do with the devil.
There you go.
But that was what we call a tangent or a side.
Oh, yes, I love the tangents.
Yeah.
So yes, when we're talking about memory and feeling and smell. And so there is a physiological explanation for those connections.
What that means.
Which is great.
I cannot wait to go home and talk to my husband about this. He does not listen to the podcast, but I feel like this one he would be absolutely interested in because he's super into metaphysics. He always wants me to read these, like, you know, the fabric of the universe kind of stuff.
Sure,
meditation and how it's not that far from science and all these different things and tapping in and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, give me a podcast. I'm not gonna
True crime.
Yeah, give me some murder, please. I'll take the murder over the meditation. But it's so true. And it's such a the feeling, like that thing that's so hard to articulate that we're struggling with right now, the feeling and the emotion of those smells and how, of course, it's connected directly to your brain. That's, of course, that there's a reasonable explanation of why that is such a straight line. There's it just a smell goes right to it. Of course. I mean, it just makes so much sense. And all that metaphysical... You know, tapping into the parts of your brain in different ways and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I'm just fangirling a little
bit. There you go.
Love it. Thank you.
Yeah,
I'm a fangirl. going back, I have a question for you all, which is, whether you like a scent or a perfume is subjective, but do you think smelling something is subjective? Like if something smells like lavender, does it just smell like lavender? To you all?
I would think so.
I don't know. I've never
thought about it.
But so I was gonna say,
or is that a lack of vocabulary? Like you were saying, having the words to describe it or experience.
Or I was gonna say, or like opportunity to experience.
Yeah.
Like I'm sure if like you sat down, you were talking upstairs earlier about high altitude lavender and low altitude lavender. I don't know.
Right. If I were to give you those two to compare, you would be able to at least momentarily smell the difference.
Be able to distinguish between the two.
I guess I don't have an answer to that question yet.
Right.
I'm not positive that smell is subjective. Maybe like obviously the associations you have, how you react to it can be unique to you, but either something, you know, there is a school of thought where, like, if it smells like eggs, it smells like eggs. And those are extreme examples. I mean, you get into more pleasant smells or subtle differences, but there's this whole, and this is, like, episode two we'll talk about this.
Sounds great.
There is this, he's not a perfumer. I can't even begin to describe him. This man named Luca Turin, who is a self-made scientist of all disciplines. Write a book that I need to lend you of perfume reviews because he is witty as fuck.
Oh, very cool.
And his nose is like beyond compare, right? Yeah. Like it's crazy. Anyway, he's been forwarding a scientific theory for the last 20 years that smells correlate with waves. Sorry, I'm not on camera. that a smell has a certain frequency.
Mm. Oh. Uh-huh.
And he's done a bunch of experiments, and he's really fought tooth and nail with modern science to change our view on smell. And his thing is, X smells like X. You can say it smells like chocolate pudding or whatever it is, but that's you and your own shit that you're bringing to it. Your apparatus smells chocolate pudding.
Yes.
Right? And so that's very interesting. And that's really opened up the question, because I love the subjectivity of it all, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
That makes sense. We all smell different things. And then reading these books, I'm like, we don't have to throw that away entirely, but that might at least, again, scientifically, might not be the case.
Right.
And so that just raises a bunch of different questions, again, about memory and personality and what we're bringing or how we're interacting with these smells, with these living entities that are plants and their essence, right?
Oh, wow. That is, I've never thought about that. But I would think, like, like a lavender smells like lavender.
That is the smell that it has.
Chocolate smells like chocolate. Yes. Milk chocolate smells like milk chocolate. Mm-hmm. Cocoa smells like cocoa.
Mm.
And maybe you have a different word for it, but the smell is the smell.
It was like a note. Like, that is A sharp.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We all agree that that's what it is.
Yeah. And if you play them all at once, maybe you just need to have a stronger skill set to hear all six of those notes.
What that is.
Right.
Not that I'm a musician, but.
Sure.
Now they're
you're a perfume musician. You're a smell musician. A musician.
Ooh, and speaking of, I'm pretty sure it was Chanel. And going back to this guy, Luca Turin, it was for Chanel or maybe some unnamed big perfume house. This is the way this guy was, where he was invited to this luncheon with, let's call it Chanel, just for fun, spread some rumors.
Mm-hmm. Sounds great.
To smell a couple versions of a perfume that they wanted to launch.
That they were working on, yeah.
And upon smelling one of them, so he gives them all these notes, these fragrance notes, and he's talking about it, smells like this, it smells like this, and he goes, it smells like that sort of silk that changes color in the sunlight. Uh-huh. And the woman, this is my drama, the woman is ashen, pulls out the brief that the client had given her, and written in this brief was, I want it to smell like that sort of silk that changes color in the light.
Oh my God, I'm chills.
Right?
That is so cool.
And so he, like, that's where this guy's aesthetic and whatever intellectual skill, like, he's vibing at such a high frequency that he's making these associations.
Wow.
And I don't even, you know, as people who deal with fabric, that would be interesting for me to hear when you're playing with certain fabrics, if you had to, or if you were loose enough, does a smell come to mind or a field or... You know, anyway, I was just like, that's next level. That's not like walking through the sweet grass fields, right?
Yeah.
There's no olfactory element to that.
Mm. Right.
And so, like, this thin aesthetic thing that's going on for him.
Multi-sensory.
And that she would articulate that so specifically and succeed in achieving that goal.
It. Right.
So that he can pick it up. Is mind-blowing.
Yeah.
It reminds me a lot of wine sommeliers and, like, the nose and the smell and the taste, and they're picking up different, you know, regions of where the grape comes from blended with another grape from another region and blah, 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 and all that kind of stuff.
And the soil in this region and that region.
Yeah. It reminds me a lot of that.
And I think it's the same when you're dealing with naturals, too, and where plants are grown. Mm-hmm. Totally change, or not totally, importantly changes the character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And informs the nature of that essence.
Mm-hmm. So interesting. Wow. How long have you been talking for?
There you go. We're approaching an hour here.
All right.
Yeah. Okay.
My God. I feel like we could talk about this for...
I was going to say, reason.
Tell me everything.
I can become a bit of a one-trick pony. I'm like, okay, shit. How many more stories do I have?
Oh.
I have this. I have that.
You have a captive audience.
I'm going to ask you one just real quick, too. The stuff that you have on the table here in front of you, you've got a couple of big bottles and a couple of smaller bottles and then a little couple of little teeny tiny ones. What have you got going on here? Because you got some old strips out. And I don't know if we'll do this on the podcast, but I want to smell some of your smells.
Well, I brought I brought my perfumes, some of my perfumes, and then, oh God, I hope it didn't get that good. And then I brought some familiar and challenging and kind of bizarre essentials.
Cool.
Ingredients. And then these two big bottles. This is Cottonwood Bud tincture that I made.
Cool.
Because I thought that'd be a very familiar smell.
Sweet.
For everyone here. And then this is the Wild Sage.
Oh, cool.
And again, like maybe not hyper familiar, but I think familiar-ish, where it's like this comes from vaguely this land. And then I brought some ambergris. No one asked me about
ambergris.
Oh, yes,
with the whale stuff, right?
That was question three.
There you go.
I'm like, everyone, if we get past one drink, it's like, so what's up with that whale puke or whatever it is? I'm like, oh, my God.
Well, there we go. Boring. Here it is.
And then a lesser known to the pedestrian, hyraceum, which is the dried droppings of a desert rabbit. It's not really a rabbit. Again, sorry, Ayala. But this creature that lives in the mountains.
Around here?
No.
Oh.
No, in the Middle East and in Africa.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Okay.
And so
people, and this is something that is used in the manufacturing.
Yeah, they're both animalic notes and then importantly, fixatives. So in natural perfume, you need certain substances that are really going to bind the notes together and kind of bind them to your skin because they all have varying.
Right, of course.
Evaporative
during
rates.
The day, you will still smell.
Yeah.
Like right, because it's an alcohol based too.
Sure, so it's just all gone.
And a lot of so the animal, and so these two are excuse me, they don't involve any sort of animal cruelty, so are preferred ingredients for natural perfumers. Yeah. And then I brought some civet, which does involve a degree of animal cruelty, which is another very long, like still it's black market at this point. Like in the perfume industry, you're not supposed to use it, but lots of companies still use it because it's just so
it
special.
Just works.
What is it?
It's the secretion from a gland of a civet cat.
Oh, okay.
And a civet cat is the same animal, you know, those fancy coffee beans.
I was going to say, it's the coffee cat.
It's the coffee cat. So these animals aren't killed for either of these products, but nonetheless aren't, at this rate, aren't treated particularly well.
I see.
So that's like this taboo ingredient, but at the same time, there's still a huge civet market. Mm. And so it's being used and just not discussed.
I see.
I think because it's kind of unparalleled in the note that it can add and its fixative qualities.
Huh.
So again, I'm kind of glad we didn't get into this because I would have gotten very confused. But for second episode, there's non-natural perfumes.
Yes.
Which is what we're all used to.
Yeah.
I see.
Like your Beyonce and your Britney Spears at Shoppers Drug Mart.
You mean those are made by hand by a witch in a basement?
No.
I live on the top floor.
Robots.
I'm sorry.
Thanks. Excuse me. But I mean, so yeah, and that's a whole other universe. There's like five chapters to that of what natural versus non-natural perfume is. There's all these degrees. I think we talked about this a bit when we met.
Mm-hmm.
And so going back to it, all of the perfumes, like the ones that you were saying, they're too strong and maybe, or they're heavy for you, Evan. And maybe maybe it's because of the oud. But I think personally, it's also because much of it is produced in a lab and is super refined. And so those molecules are built to like stay longer and be bigger, right? And so these animal products, and then also various resins, like it doesn't have to be an animal product that's a civet, that's a civet, that's a fixative. But for me, as I'm learning, that's what I really struggle with is longevity of these perfumes, because as much as we all want something that's natural and we don't want this other shit, we're very used to having a perfume
that creates like a 5-foot aura around us and lasts until tomorrow, right? Or longer. Mm-hmm. Or it's in your clothes until you wash them, sort of thing. And natural perfumes don't behave in that fashion. And I think as I'm becoming someone who wants to market these products, everyone's all excited, oh, natural, handcrafted, all of this. But I really am concerned about the level of disappointment when the perfume lasts for 4 or 5 hours in any important way.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think, anyway.
Or to the degree that they're expecting with from huge big perfume industry houses and factories.
Well, that's a good thing to note for our listeners that's what you're getting when you get a perfume. That's a natural. What you're getting and why. Yeah.
Or not.
I didn't know that. I had no idea.
Yeah, I know a thing or two about having to educate your customer as to why you run your business the way you do.
Yeah.
You know, like people aren't used to waiting 60 days to get their order shipped, let alone arriving at their door.
Yeah.
So my hat is off to you in this journey. But I really do think like the person who is interested in that kind of experience and that kind of product is like Katie. They would be so open to learning why it's done this certain way.
Right.
And the ethics behind all of that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. If you're going to go out of your way to find someone who makes these things on their own.
And has made these choices to.
Yeah, and to do it naturally.
Create a product.
Yeah.
They're going to be curious about why it is like that and respect it. I think it's the whole slow fashion movement.
People caring and wanting information about the products that they're buying and using and putting on their bodies.
Yeah.
And I think also for me, I mean, I have some perfumes that are so beautiful that are made on an industrial scale. They're so beautiful, like the artistry, all of it. But at the same time, I start getting,
getting a little frog in your throat.
Yeah. Oh no, I talk too much.
Keep going, you're fine.
Go ahead.
I get freaked out by the perfume that doesn't change.
Oh yeah.
Right? So that's the thing when I was talking about these perfumes and how things evaporate at different rates, it goes through a personality shift.
Mm-hmm.
And over time and body heat, it smells, you know, ideally it's going to have there's going to be some sort of continuous character to it, but ultimately it's breathing and deteriorating along with you.
Mm-hmm.
Breathing
and deteriorating. So,
one day at a time. This
big blue ball.
But I start feeling oppressed and freaked out and angry by this perfume that doesn't change.
That is just so static.
And it's not after a point, like the relationship that your skin has with it, in my mind disappears because it's still there. It's still exactly the same. Huh. And it feels like, I don't know if this was your experience, Evan, with those stronger perfumes, but it feels kind of like it's
jarring.
It's wearing me.
Yeah,
or
it's
like
an affront.
It's invasive.
Yeah, it's exactly
there
that.
There you go.
Word. Yeah, yeah.
Huh.
And so I've become someone, as I become more educated around perfume, I'm like, oh, the beautiful story around this amazing perfume or this Chanel or whatever it is. And then I'm wearing it and I'm like, oh my God, like wash it off. And I'm becoming one of those people. And I was never that person. But it's like now I just,
Mm-hmm.
So I think maybe the consumer these days might be more interested in something that not only is natural and sexy and groovy and all of that, but something that's a little bit more like personal and malleable.
Sure. And dynamic and interesting.
Yeah.
And fluid. Mm-hmm. And
it's like wearing a... It's like wearing a polyester blouse and a linen blouse.
Yeah.
The polyester one will not change. You know what I mean? And it becomes...
It doesn't become like a part hard. Of you and your wardrobe.
Yeah, it becomes just a thing that gets put on and not a thing that you wear.
It is wearing. Yeah. It is worn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how I can best sort of compare
it. It's like difference between like plastic track pants and a pair of great jeans that are going to mold and wear with your body and
stretch and give and definitely
get the whiskering or whatever because you wear your knees bend there and that's where they are
and you're a human and humans move and changed.
Or maybe a better analogy would be like pre-distress genes and then genes that you distress yourself.
On your own.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Right. Because you're always living with those distressed lines that you came with.
Yeah.
Yes. They were imposed on you.
Yeah, even if your knees don't bend there.
Exactly. Yeah. Like me. Oh, God. Some back in the day when that whole distress gene thing, like when I was in high school, they were always like up here. My legs are so long, they'd be like a good like 3 or 4 inches. All the distress would be like
on not
my
at
thigh
your knee.
And not at my kneecap.
Yeah. Oh boy. I mean, as much as I hate to say it, I think we need to
take a little break.
Wrap it up, take a break, and then we can come back to Obsess. Thank you so much for imparting all of this knowledge. Yes. It's so fascinating.
You.
It's so cool. I hope our listeners are as into it as we are, but I want to smell some of those. I'm excited to shut this off and start doing some stuff.
Well, thanks for having me.
Of course, of course.
This is lovely.
We're going to take a quick break and we'll come right back.
We'll be right back.
And we're back. We're playing a bit of a smell game with some smells and some little strips.
It's delightful.
It's so interesting how they all, like you were saying, you get the smells of different things. Like, here, smell a lemon and then smell the basil. And, oh, yeah, that's nice, whatever. But it's not clear how they relate to each other.
Yeah.
So you need, 10 times as much lemon as basil to even smell
to be able to
the
smell
lemon
both.
Next to it. Very so, cool. Mad science. I love it. It's so cool.
That.
Anyway.
Yes.
We're here for obsessions.
Lovely.
I don't know if you've thought of one or if you want to go last or whatever. We can come back to you.
I'd like to hear
what
you all are talking
about. Cool. Okay, great. Why don't I start because I'm already talking.
You get one ready. Yep.
This is really exciting. My husband, Chris Carter, he is an illustrator. I think I've mentioned him on the podcast before.
A couple times, yeah.
He's got an Instagram called LeBigFun.
He also illustrated our logo.
Yes. He did our logo, that's right. Yes. He, after many years of, stopping and starting and starting and stopping and...
Procrastinating and
Well, not even procrastinating, just actually doing it is really hard.
Yeah.
He found the right platform, which was a big deal, but he opened a little online boutique, as he's calling it. And it's part of Threadless. So Threadless has an artist shop now, which is only in the last year or two. If you know what Threadless is, Google it. I'm not going to explain it all, but it's cool. It's cool t-shirts. It's an artist platform. Anyway, they just launched this platform in the last couple of years where you can, as an artist, put your art onto the site and they will take care of putting on a t-shirt or a tote bag or a mug or a pillow or a duvet
or
a phone case, a water bottle, stickers, all kinds of different things.
Very cool.
As an artist, you just provide the artwork. And if something sells, you get, a few bucks, you get a kickback on it, whatever. And they take care of the shipping, they take care of the printing, they take care of all of the logistics. It's such a cool platform for guys like my husband, who are great artists.
Has talent and idea and
have no interest in
figuring out
how buying 200 t-shirts and getting them printed and marketing, like all that kind of stuff. The stuff that you have to take care of is putting the art out there and promoting your site. There's not really like a platform on Threadless where it's like, check out the artist site.
Yeah.
Like it's not really there. So I'm telling you right now.
There you go.
Bigfun.threadless.com. He's got, as of right now, he's only got, I think, 3 or 4 images up, but we've got a folder on the desktop full of more pieces to go up.
Potential.
My favorite one that's on there right now is, I don't know if I mentioned this one before, but he's done this Lisa Simpson Stay Woke, and it's Lisa Simpson sitting cross-legged in a meditative state, and it says Stay Woke in the classic Simpsons writing underneath, but she's
fantastic.
Off the ground. She's levitating off the ground, and she's got a third eye that is open. Her other two eyes are closed. It's so good. It's just
beautiful.
So simple and delightful and on point. And you can get on a pillow, you can get on a bag, you can get on a shirt, you can get it, whatever. Yeah. He's got a shirt of his own that everyone is like, that shirt is dope as shit. Where did you get
it?
So now you can get them.
There you go.
I'm so excited. They're I have always been a huge fan of his art.
Yes. Well, stop. There you go.
So now you guys can get your own.
So can you.
Yeah. Yeah, bigfun.threadless.com, and I'll put a link up. Obviously, there's one for Ular, the Norse god of skiing.
Oh, I saw that guy.
A good kind of a rat fink style guy.
Yes.
And then he just put a Krampus one up for Christmas. So
seasonal stuff.
Yeah. So go check it out. There'll be more. I hope by the time this episode actually comes out, there'll be another design or two. Probably not in time to get it for a Christmas gift, but who gives a shit?
There you go.
Buy yourself a water bottle.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's a great place for him to make a little bit of money on a thing that he loves to do anyways without having to compromise his vision or his sanity or take on any risks. Yeah, anything like that. He can just be the master of his own platform. So I'm like, which ones do I want right now? Like, I want a little zip bag and I want a little tote bag for groceries.
Yeah.
Probably get the Stay Woke.
Very cool.
And it's totally reasonably priced as well. So check that out, bigfun.threadless.com.
Sweet.
That's me, yeah. What about you, Yvonne?
I've devoured season two of Mrs. Maisel already.
Yes.
It's so good.
Yes.
It's good so to know. Good.
The what clothes? Is that about?
Okay, so it's set in the 50s, and it's centers around this early to mid-20s.
Housewife,
two kids, married, she's Jewish. Her dad works at Columbia, her mom's a housewife, and her husband's family owns a garment factory, so they make women's clothes. And her husband leaves her, divorces her, and moves in with his secretary. And it's basically like how her like perfect life and how she was this perfect girl in New York and she was the perfect wife and
she had everything had going
perfect
for
children,
her.
The perfect apartment.
Right.
And how really at the end of it all her life was trash and her husband was trash.
He's a shit.
And like
he sounds not great.
And, yeah, and like her mom has been enforcing her with all this like bullshit her whole life.
Bullshit.
And her father has and all this stuff. And her father doesn't really like her husband and like, you know, like all basically reality crashes in and she has what she calls like an emotional breakdown, but she does it on stage with as a comedian.
Oh.
And she like becomes like super like well known in the New York comedy scene.
No way.
It's like her rise in the New York comedy scene.
I had no idea that's what that show was about. Yeah. Cool. Well, now I'm actually kind of interested.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
I thought it was like a housewife story.
There's a lot of that, but like she makes fun of herself and she makes fun of the fact that she's a rich white girl from the Upper East Side.
Yeah.
And she, you know, she does all this. It's really funny. And
I did not know.
And it's interesting to see that time period through her eyes because it's like everything in her world is like Technicolor and it looks like an MGM set.
Mm.
But then when she goes to like this grungy bar, it takes on what her version of like a grungy bar would look like.
What would be?
Like everything is very heightened visually. Like the costumes are very heightened. Like,
well, it keeps winning all these awards. I guess there's a reason.
Something to it.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. I had no idea.
Yeah. And like, I really like her parents or the parents. Her dad's played by Tony Shalhoub.
Oh, that's beautiful. Fun.
So perfect. Perfection. Yeah. I feel like their scenes together are always really good. Her mom is fucking wild. She's just, I don't know, like, she's just that, like, Upper East Side Jewish housewife. And all of those, like, cutting one-liners, like, just, she can just cut people down in, like, 5 words. And awesome. It's just so good.
That might be my favorite quality in a woman.
Yes.
Just, like,
good.
Just to be able to sass you real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, put you in your place.
Yeah. That's one thing I strive for.
There's this one scene in the most recent episode, she's like, so your husband was telling me you were thinking of buying burial plots in Israel. When do you think that's going to happen?
Yeah.
So good.
Cool. Fantastic.
Yeah. So it looks like the visual of that show is very Technicolor MGM musical, but it's pretty like the comedy is pretty like dirty and
fun.
Like very
sweet.
Yeah. They're also very critical of the time period they're in, which is something I enjoy. They don't just pretend that everything was sunshine and lollipops and rainbows.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was ready to just completely dismiss the show.
But there you go. I'm about to take another look.
Mm-hmm.
That's sweet.
Mmm.
Oopsies. Abby, what about you?
For me,
I would love a cure for a hangover.
Poutine and a Caesar.
But on an actual obsession, I'm reading the John Hodgman book that Katie bought me for my birthday. Vacation Land, which was, I haven't finished it yet, but it's awesome. He's a very smart and clever man.
So funny.
He's very funny and he's very charming. And I love it very much. I also just finished a David Sedaris book. I've had an obsession with his books.
Which one?
Calypso.
Oh, I don't know that one.
I think it's one of the newer ones. I haven't read all of his stuff. I probably read maybe 5 or 6 of his books, but like fully snort laughing in bed.
Yeah.
You know, like there. So funny. And I'm breaking my no cishet white dudes author rules that I'm trying to.
Well, I broke that one for you. You did. Yes. So I did
he
that
pushed
for you.
Me. Yeah. He pushed me to it, but it's okay. I can do it for him. There's a whole bunch of other old white dudes that I would not do it for.
Yeah.
But I will gladly do it for him. So thank you, Katie. I'm very much enjoying
You're
it.
You're very welcome. Yes. I've had that book on my birthday list. Like I'll just, if something comes to me for someone's birthday,
yeah,
I'll keep a note in my phone.
Yeah.
That's been on my list for you for a long time.
Nice.
So we were at the bookstore.
Like, my birthday's at the end of the year and we were in a birthday. Yeah. It just worked out.
The time worked out perfectly. It was when we were at the Erin Gibson Feminazi book show. And I was like, we're here. There's a copy here. Happy birthday. I'm a few days early, but this is yours now.
It's totally fine. I love it. Thank you.
Good. I'm so glad.
So that's mine.
Also, I'm going to borrow that if that's okay when you're dead.
Go for it. Well, I was remembering I had lent you, I don't know if you had a chance to read, Perfume.
No, but it's on my nightstand. I have
the I'd next recommend one to get through. That one.
Now I'm 100%. Now I'm
that's
like.
Question number 4.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful that didn't come up.
Yeah.
No, or Scent of a Woman.
Yes, I read Perfume.
Yes.
I really like Jitterbug Perfume by Tom Robbins.
Oh, I don't think I've ever read any Tom Robbins.
I don't think I have.
Yeah, it's interesting and wild, which is the way that he writes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Very cool.
Do you, have you thought of anything? Is there anything knocking around your brain?
Well, even that sage essence, maybe, I don't know, or whatever it was.
Is that my current obsession?
Maybe, I don't know.
My obsession this afternoon is, why is your skin so perfect, Katie?
Me?
Yeah, yes. There you go.
Like, mine is always, mine is always her hair.
Oh, yeah, and the hair.
Katie's got good hair.
Oh, I actually did my hair.
Katie looks like she sleeps in a roller set every fucking day.
Agreed. Well, I actually tried because I had a fancy party to go to last night, so I actually put some effort in, and hairspray.
It'll do it.
Turns out hairspray is the thing that works.
Yeah.
What's my secret?
Yeah, do you have a secret, or is it just genetics?
I almost never wear makeup.
Yeah.
I wash my face every morning with Cetaphil.
Okay.
Which is like basically water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With a face cloth to get the
it all up in
exfoliation.
There. Yeah.
And then I wear a Cetaphil brand moisturizer that you can get at the drugstore.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit expensive for a drugstore brand. But it's an SPF 15.
Mm.
And that's truly
magic.
And good genes. Yep, my mom has beautiful skin. I have
no
freckles.
Lotions and potions.
So I don't want to cover them up. And I hate makeup. I don't give a shit about makeup. Mm-hmm. This has come up a few times on the podcast. I'm not like these
it's
dudes.
It's natural jam.
Me and Abby are like, have you seen the new Fenty? The new Pat McGrath?
Yeah.
Oh. I have finally entered the modern era, and I just started watching RuPaul's Drag Race.
Ooh,
that was my obsession last episode.
So, yeah, and I thought maybe that was my research. That was my R&D coming into this podcast with you guys, where I'm like, I don't know fuck all about fashion. I don't know who
you
is.
You can get a lot
anything.
Out of Drag Race.
And so
there was an episode in season 5. They make a perfume.
I know. I just finished
there
that
you
season.
Go.
And then I was like, fucking cheaters. They've got these little vials that smell like wet earth and shit like that. Yes. I'm like, come on, idiots.
All the work is done. Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
Make it smell like wet earth yourself, you lady.
Figure it out.
But Jesus. So I'm pretty happy about that.
That's a good
watching
one.
Watching RuPaul and
it's so good.
Watching everyone.
I was talking to somebody
develop.
Last night about he's like, I've never watched this. And I'm like, you do not need to have any interest in any
anything.
Of the things to be highly entertained by all of it.
So now I get to be everyone's envy because I'm on season 5, suckers.
Well done.
And I didn't watch season 1. So there you go.
Oh, yeah.
Bonus secret season for when I move all the way through the current time.
You can see the difference.
Yeah,
the
you filter. Definitely see the difference.
There's a filter that was on the first season that made everything like all glowy and
ooh,
stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
God.
Do you remember, this is in maybe season 3, might have been season 3, but you know, some of the language that we get to learn through like drag speak.
Yes.
There was something that was basically 3 words to make an exclamation point. Was like to the roof or to the door or do you know what I'm talking about?
To the window, to the door.
I don't know.
House down like, boots.
What's that?
House down boots, something like
house
that.
House down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Work the house down boots for your life, hunty.
Yeah. Thank you. House down. House yeah. down boots or house down?
Or yeah. Or you can work the house down. Something the house. Yeah.
Yeah.
The house because the house would be like the space that you're in. Yes. Or also your house, like your drag house or
yes.
your like, voguing house.
Your family. Or
yeah. I loved that. I was like, I've yeah. always wanted a small phrase to make an exclamation point.
Yeah. Yes.
Sounds pretty great. Excellent. Your skin's beautiful. The house down.
The house down.
Right?
That's exactly the use.
Oh my Thank God. You. I'm so touched.
Yes.
Using the drag. Oh my God, Katie, we need to bring you to the gay bar. You'll be getting so many compliments
oh my
from
God.
The girls.
Thank you.
From the dolls.
The ghouls.
Oh, awesome.
I'd love to go. It's been a while since I've been to a drag show. Should,
yeah.
We're overdue,
we
I think.
Do. We gotta do it.
Yeah, it's been
2019.
A while.
What happened in 2019?
Yes.
We'll make yeah. it happen.
Let's do it. Before we sign off, where can we find you? Where
online?
We've got. I know you have an Instagram.
Online. Currently, Instagram's the best place to find me.
Okay.
So it's Enone Perfume,
Enone. We will put a link up as yes. well. If
yeah.
Send
yes, us on
yep.
website. And my website is. Any day now,
yeah,
but maybe in
but
2 weeks.
Coming.
Yeah, okay. Well, let me know because we're recording this a few days early, so by the time this actually comes out, there
maybe.
Might be something,
maybe a
right.
link.
Yeah,
we'll get there.
Gotcha. Yes, I will be live and for real soon.
Excellent.
Yeah. Nice.
I'm
beautiful.
So excited. Those ones that we smelled of yours that you were actual like your actual perfumes that you created are so
beautiful.
Great. I'm so excited
beautiful.
To
thank
see
you.
Them. Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, thank you so much for enlightening
making
us
time
on
for
stuff
us.
That
yeah.
we are totally unfamiliar with. So it was cool.
Very,
very cool
pleasure.
To learn about it and
yes.
and for taking the time out. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Making me famous.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So someone said to me, they're like, oh, now you're going to be famous. I was like, yes.
Yes.
Finally happening.
Ready.
It's happening.
Fashion Hacks.
Making it happen.
You guys can find us in all the usual places. We're Fashion Hacks Podcast on Instagram. Find us on
Facebook.
On the World Wide Web.
Yes, our website,
fashionhacks.com. And yeah, you know, do that. And remember that we love you.
But we love fashion more and perfume.
Bye.
Bye. Fashion.